Welcome to Designed for More, brought to you by Common Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. Join Dr. Timothy Jennings, a renowned expert in psychiatry, neuroscience, and spiritual well-being, as he explores the connections between mind, body, spirit, and relationships.
Hello, and welcome to Designed for More, sponsored by Common Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. I'm Dr. Tim Jennings, and I'm joined today by Annalisa Moretto, one of our therapists, and James Johnson, our chief of chaplains. And our topic today is unseen wounds, understanding emotional neglect, and its long-term effects. You guys see patients, people, church members?
Oh, consistently. And specifically with emotional neglect, one thing that I've seen with patients is, oh, it wasn't that bad. It's not like it was physical abuse. It wasn't sexual abuse. It's not obvious. Oh, I don't want to focus on this. I don't want to go to that place. I don't want to touch this. I don't want to let this go.
And emotional neglect, does it have a different impact depending on when in one's life they're experiencing it? In other words, an adult who's being neglected but had a very healthy childhood, would that have a different impact than, say, a child being raised in a home where there's neglect?
Yeah, I mean, they've got a stronger sense of self and stability and safety.
So let's talk about the impact of, let's start first with neglect for those who have raised in homes where there's significant neglect. What happens? Why is that a problem? Then they're not being cursed, they're not being molested, they're just being neglected. Why is that a problem?
I think one of the things I've seen is that it creates some of this confusion because it has the appearance of health. You know, they're getting fed. Mm-hmm. They have a roof over their head. They maybe even have good things in their life, like private schools, nice things. But that person is either absent from the home, or they're just ignoring the child, or they're not, you know, partaking in all of the what things we would consider interpersonal in a healthy way. You know, it ends up becoming a lot more of a business transaction in the home rather than a relationship.
Yeah.
So yes, you described that. See if we can unpack though.
Right.
What are the consequences? Emotional neglect, is there a difference from overt abuse? What's the difference between neglect and abuse?
I mean, I'm having a hard time saying that it sounds a lot like a type of abuse to me, you know? I mean, I don't know how we can,
abuse is threatening.
Okay.
Abuse is a threat, an assault of some kind, verbal, physical, abusive.
Yeah.
So that inflames fear.
Well, for example, if someone needs a medical procedure and I'm not threatening them, but I'm withholding that from them, something that is a need that they have to form a bond and to form an attachment, that's deeply painful as well.
Okay. Abuse. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So we're trying to. So abuse is something that would be overtly inflicted.
Mm-hmm.
Neglect would be something that was failed to be given.
Yeah.
So one's given and one's withheld.
One is actively inflicted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
One is something that was not given that was reasonably should have been given.
Okay.
Is that a fair?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Definition? Okay. And while both can be harmful, mm-hmm. do they cause the exact same types of harm? Okay, so we've talked in our trauma one, we're not going to go there again, about abuse,
right?
Various abuse and how that flames up mm-hmm. hypervigilance and distrust and what does neglect do? Neglect, and let's give an example. A child who doesn't get held, doesn't get cuddled, mm-hmm. doesn't get affirmed, doesn't get kissed, doesn't get told they're loved. No matter what they do, they don't get abused. They get basically ignored. They don't get validated. The work they show mommy and daddy, looked at and tossed aside. So neglect, that is not an attack.
No.
Okay, but what's the consequence of neglect? Of the parent figure being unavailable in a reasonable way.
Chronic low self-worth, difficulty trusting people, people-pleasing behaviors. I mean, the list goes on.
Yes, yeah, no, no. We want that list, and we want to unpack that. So yes, exactly. So what would a child internalize if they see other children at school and on the playground, at the ball field or wherever, with parents who are cheering them, parents who are high-fiving them, parents who are picking them up and riding them on their shoulders? And no matter what they do, their parent doesn't do any of that. How does that get internalized to the child that's being neglected?
Well, they're certainly not looking up to their parents saying, you dropped the ball, you should be cheering me on. They turn that inwards. There's something wrong with me.
Exactly. This is huge. It forms an empty, inadequate ball of fear and doubt that something is wrong with me. I'm not lovable. I'm not good enough. I'm broken. And they end up often in these cycles of seeking external validations, people-pleasing, as you mentioned a minute ago. But no matter how much people-pleasing they get later in life, it never satisfies because they formed a sense of self built on the neglect, and they still feel empty and inadequate.
Yeah.
Is this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens to the way they form relationships? How do relationships form with people who've been... Oh, but before we get to that, neurobiologically, when animals or children come into the world, if they have attentive mothers and fathers, but caregivers, who touch, groom, hold, kiss, interact with, the brain develops differently.
Wow. Okay.
Than if they have neglect mothers. If they have neglect mothers, parents, caregivers, then what happens is the circuits of the brain that would normally send a calming circuit down to the fear circuits do not develop properly. And they become more irritable, more anxious, more distrusting. And they have harder time bonding and connecting later in life because neurobiologically the brain doesn't form properly. It's actually very necessary for this early. In fact, there's an interesting, you want to call it a study. Frederick the Great of Germany had a, back whenever he was ruler of the empire, had this hypothesis that the original language spoken in Eden by Adam and Eve before sin was German. And he wanted to test that hypothesis, see if he could prove that was true. So at a orphanage, he ordered a certain number of the foundlings, these are infants that were foundlings, that were in the orphanage when they were left as infants, that they were not to have any human contact or touch. They were, all the caregivers were to use these wooden instruments to lift them, to change them, to feed them, but no human touch and no languages to be spoken. And his hypothesis was that they would, as they grow, spontaneously start speaking German, and he would have his hypothesis proven. And do you know what happened at the end of the study? They all died. All of them.
Stop.
They all died. Without human contact, without even though they're providing the food and the changing and the warmth, without the touch and the absolute neglect, they cannot thrive.
Oh, that's alarming.
Yes. So think that. Why is that alarming? Why do you say it's alarming? Are you thinking through the implications of what that might mean?
Yeah. And I'm also thinking about the patients that I work with that are consistently minimizing the emotional neglect that they experience because it doesn't fit a specific mold of the physical, the sexual trauma.
Okay. So as you think through that, so they got enough that they didn't die.
Yeah.
Okay. But did they get enough to thrive?
There we go. No.
Yeah. And so maybe that report of what Frederick the Great did could help them.
Yeah.
But the neglect will lead to a cascade of insecurity and fear that gets perpetuated in relationships. Often they'll end up in relationships where people will, they'll subordinate themselves inappropriately. because they don't have a healthy sense of health, and they, healthy sense of self, mm-hmm. and they just need, and they're constantly craving or needing some affirmation.
Yeah.
And children in neglect homes will prefer abusive treatment to neglect. So they'll begin acting out oftentimes mm-hmm. to get disciplined. Because being disciplined, at least they care enough to discipline.
Some attention is better than no attention.
Wow, that makes yeah, I'm looking, thinking back on the years I spent in education, and one of the things that is thankfully not as prevalent as it used to be, but there was it seemed like for many years there was a model where in order to get government assistance and not have to work, a lot of people would have children and they didn't really care for the children. The children were a means to a paycheck. And then as those children would grow up in the school, those are the kids that acted out. And I can just see, you know, I spent almost 2 decades in the same school, and I got to watch a lot of those children start, because it was a small town, kindergarten through 12th grade system. And I could think over the years of those kids as they developed, knowing how they were raised. That makes so much sense. It's very sad, but it makes sense.
So there's the neurobiological piece. Then there's the form identity piece.
Yeah.
So what they're really craving, significance,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
identity. Mm-hmm. Am I valuable? Do I matter? Mm-hmm. Does anyone care? That's why they act out.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's what they're seeking. Mm-hmm. And of course, all of us are seeking that deep inside mm-hmm. with our creator. Do I matter? Mm-hmm. Who am I? Where'd I come from? Where am I going? What are those big questions you talk about?
Yeah, the ontological questions. Yeah, origin, meaning, morality, and destiny. Yeah.
And it's a deep desire in the soul mm-hmm. to connect with our creator. And it starts with the connection with healthy parents who value them. And when you give them the time. And kids, you know this, at least small ones, unless they, at a certain age, if they're raised in toxic homes, they might become so self-centered interested in stuff that this no longer is true because they only care about themselves. But this is not natural. Most kids, healthy kids, even in dysfunctional homes, the natural desire, mm-hmm. they value the time of their parents more than the quantity of the presents. Mm-hmm. Buying presents, even expensive ones, and just handing them off and ignoring the kid, mm-hmm. The kid would rather have your time, hang out with them,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
than to just give them a present.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. That makes sense. Does this impact, in a different vein, I guess, does this tend to impact their emotional maturation as far as interrelational skills? Like one of the things I've observed is when parents tend to not spend as much time with their kids, their children end up being stunted in their conversational skills, mm-hmm. they end up being stunted in their interpersonal, how they relate with other people, because they haven't seen it modeled mm-hmm. by healthy parenting. Is that just, you know, random, or is that something that you've noticed in the brain that delays the onset of those abilities or formation?
Well, when you say conversational interpersonal skills, I want to be clear, you're not talking about verbal language skills. You're not talking verbal language. That's not what you mean.
No. I mean,
because they may have very normal verbal language, had good grades in English.
Right.
Okay. You're talking about the ability to actually have a healthy interaction.
Yes.
Yes. And you're exactly right. They will be stunted in that ability. But if they're bright, if they're high IQ, they might actually be quite good at speaking and they sound really great. Mm-hmm. But if you're actually watching how the relationships work, they will use their verbal skills mm-hmm. with that empty void to manipulate relationships mm-hmm. to get what they feel that they need, which is not what they in truth need. Mm-hmm. And those relationships end up in toxic in some way because they end up being pretty much one way, me first, need relationship. Because again, what's the core thing in the soul? It's not there. It is a void of identity, void of adequacy, void of validity, mm-hmm. void of a sense of wholeness that was never foundationally laid in their childhood. What was laid was inadequacy. You don't matter. You're not important. And so that's what got internalized not by word, by deed, by experience. I'm not valuable enough to hold. I'm not valuable enough to turn off the TV and play a game with. I'm not valuable enough to give a high five, to come to the game even. Got to take a ride with a neighbor to go to the game, et cetera, okay? And so there's this deep internal sense of inadequacy. So neglect, leads to an inadequate sense of self mm-hmm. that longs for adequacy or validation, but it typically, unless they have a real experience with Jesus Christ, will result in seeking that adequacy from people who are probably not the most mature, and they end up often subordinating themselves in various ways just to be valued in some way.
So it creates kind of a dependent relationship.
And these people can often go out into certain caregiver roles. They will often have significant identity disturbances as well, and they can end up in various, you know, cults.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or extreme movements in society.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that that's like a compulsive repetition pattern where they're seeking someone that deeply resembles mom or dad, someone that's emotionally distant, because they're like, if I can attach to this person, have a loving relationship with this person, I can make up for the wrongs or the loss from my past. So then they start pursuing anxiously, people pleasing, whatever it takes. But then as that particular person then starts drawing closer, then they become avoidant?
Yes, 100%. That absolutely can happen. It is not, this is the way it will always happen, mm-hmm. but it yeah. absolutely happens, and it yeah. can happen, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you see that dynamic, mm-hmm. you know, the recapitulation of that relationship, finding someone who's also distant, pursuing mm-hmm. as an unconscious drive to try to fix that primary relationship, which is really the drive to try to fix the self, mm-hmm. to get the self, the validation, the love, the affirmation they didn't get in the primary relationship. But it never works. It never actually typically always makes things worse, mm-hmm. because what happens is they're pursuing somebody who has similar pathologies, mm-hmm. and you just recapitulate the same wounds over and over again.
Yeah.
So one of the things I've seen at the clinic here is as people do their therapeutic work and they look back on their life, maybe they do something like a genogram or something, and they recognize, wow, I never really knew that was the home I grew up in, and maybe it never really occurred to them. If somebody's at home or watching this video and they're looking at their life, what are some of the signs that they could look back and say, wow, I grew up in a home where I was emotionally neglected? What are some of the signs they could look for as they look back on their life?
So looking signs.
So if they look back at their family origins, oh, I was raised in an emotional neglectful home and I never realized it.
Yeah. So signs, mm-hmm. I would have said, what are some of the...
Or indicators.
Yeah. Okay. Because signs are something you're experiencing now.
Right. Okay.
And then you're looking back at historical mm-hmm. facts.
Okay.
Okay. Signs would be things like, I have a hard time trusting people. Mm-hmm. Signs would be things like, I approach a relationship, but the closer it gets, the more anxious I get.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those are the signs
okay.
that are going. The signs are things you're experiencing now. Okay. Signs and symptoms, things you're experiencing now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, looking back on, you would look back at the history of your actual home. Well, what were the facts of your home? Mm-hmm. Did you have parents that were available? Did you have a confidant? Did you have a home in which when you got bullied or picked on at school or something embarrassing happened, you came out of the bathroom with toilet paper on your shoe and everybody laughed, okay? Mm-hmm. Something happened. Could you go home and you had a confidant, a parent that you could talk about, and they worked you through that and you felt a sense of peace and love and acceptance and validation and normalization? Or did you feel you were always on your own, that if you tried to approach them, you would get some type of irritation, you're bothering me, and so you learn to avoid? So looking back on that kind of dynamic, what was the home like? Well, because a lot of them will say it like you, well, there was no abuse. Okay, another question to ask is, did you feel loved as a child?
Mm. That's a good question.
Okay, you asked the question. I was like,
oh, yeah.
Do you feel loved as a child? And the answer often is, well, I know I was loved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
That's okay. A big indicator right there that there might have been some emotional neglect going on. Mm-hmm. Because you look back and go, well, they provided for us. They put us in private schools. Mm-hmm. That never went without. You know, we were never abused. If you went with a question, they'd give you a question, but it was really kind of a matter of fact. They would mm-hmm. answer appropriately to your concerns, but there wasn't much interest. They just weren't available. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a classic answer of emotional neglect, that you had parents that provided the needs, but they didn't connect emotionally. Now, let's also put this out there. The emotional neglect can occur not because you have neglectful parents.
Hmm.
And when I mean neglectful, mm-hmm. meaning that the parents are full of neglect. In other words, the parents are parents who are choosing to be emotionally neglectful.
Right.
You may have a high-functioning autistic parent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who has no, they have all the goodwill in the world.
Yeah.
They have their heart totally doing everything that they know, mm-hmm. and their motive is for the welfare of their child.
Yeah.
But they, as a high-functioning autistic, are not emotionally, they don't see, they don't register. The example of the high-functioning autistic with normal language skills, mm-hmm. Formerly called Asperger's, mm-hmm. would be a person with blindness. Mm-hmm. And if you had a parent with blindness and they never commented on how pretty your hair was.
Right.
Or they never commented on how well you drew in your art book. Mm-hmm. Okay, they're not being neglectful. They can't see it to comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
But if the child didn't know the parent was blind.
Exactly.
And kept doing all the stuff and the parents never comment on the things you would see.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They would feel neglected.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some individuals who grow up in homes yeah. where they have emotional neglect with parents who are not actually in their heart motive neglectful. They may have a neurobiologic condition where they don't register the emotional cues and respond in the emotional attentive ways.
Yeah.
But if you pointed that to them, they would want to, mm-hmm. but they just don't see it. Like a blind parent would want to comment on the hairstyle or something.
Can emotional neglect come from a set of parents who mean well, but they're distracted by other priorities? What's coming to mind is maybe, and I don't want to lump everything into a category, I've just seen this a bunch from children who are children of missionaries.
I was going to say children of pastors.
Same idea. Yeah. I mean, that you've got the church is so important. I've got to be at the meetings. I've got to be at the services. I've got to get my sermon ready. I've got to go to the conferences or missionary working. I've got to go to this village or that village. And as a response, the children...
Yes, 100%. And that, in my view, and I've seen this more than once, mm-hmm. it's almost always the case that the Christian leader who's doing this mm-hmm. Has gotten their priorities wrong.
Right.
And there is, as much as they want to believe mm-hmm. they're operating under a spirit of love, they're actually operating in a spirit of fear.
Mm.
And they're doing this good work mm-hmm. out of this sense of duty. The sense of responsibility, the sense of wanting to be good enough for God, the sense of not wanting to fail in their mission, that they felt this burden that it must do. They don't want to be called out by their parishioners or their church leadership. They don't want a bad report about them going somewhere. So based on all the fear and wanting to make themselves look good or to be good in their own conduct, they neglect the family in order to fulfill the mission. When the spirit of love, which always rejoices in the truth, is totally for the mission, but they recognize that when they have children at home, mm-hmm. they have a responsibility to their family.
Yeah.
Yeah. First.
Okay. First, in a prioritized way. And there is a line where yes, you will not neglect your other duties for a indulgence of the family.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a line there. You can where a person could go, it's my family, 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 and they never do anything with their duties, okay, and they could try to make that argument, but that would also be the other end of fear with self-centeredness. I'm going to use my family's excuse to not have to do my work.
Mm-hmm.
But a truly loving person will fulfill their duties to their home, mm-hmm. and the Bible actually calls that as a principle about the qualities of an elder deacon must have a healthy home.
Yes.
Okay, you have to fill those duties first, mm-hmm. and then go on. And I think because of the way our society works, the pressures of external expectations. I think a lot of people end up in the ministry with good hearts, but they're still vulnerable to the spirit of fear and insecurity and accusation, mm-hmm. that they're responding to that to try to mitigate conflict and problem rather than simply fulfilling their duties and governance of themselves mm-hmm. as God is leading them to do it and lead people free. Mm-hmm. And then trusting God with the outcome. That's the big deal. If I'm doing my duty, fulfilling it righteously, and this organization falsely accuses me and crucifies me on a cross. Mm-hmm. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing.
That's right.
Rather than, well, let me compromise so they won't crucify me.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, the when it's the unhealthy, misprioritized spirit of fear mindset, what does that do to the kids and their faith?
So then that was going to, I would thank you for following up with that. So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
I bet you've seen that. What about the you know, and this is it an accident that there's this kind of, it's, what's the word I'm looking for when something is, you know, generalized and it's just like a, every, the PK, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. What's that term I'm looking for when there's this notoriety around a certain
stereotype?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Stereotype. Is there a reason there's a stereotype around a PK? And a PK, for those who don't know, is a pastor's kid.
That's right.
Preacher's kid.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a stereotype that's out there about
that?
And we'll describe the stereotype and then describe where might that come from?
Ooh, so usually if you're a PK, you know, usually you're held to a higher standard. You know, you're expected to be the model of what, you know, Christianity looks like, especially in childhood. You're expected to be devout and you're expected to, of course, then they almost always are expected to be rebels. You know, they're expected to.
That's the PK portion I was going to.
Usually,
but I'm glad you tied it to the front because I wouldn't have done that. And I think it's important and instructive that you did.
Yeah, and because they end up creating problems on both ends, that on the one hand, there's, especially in early childhood, I've seen
expand the rebel portion.
Oh, the rebel portion.
Of the classic PK.
Right, yeah.
And then do the whole connection.
I guess the standard is so high on them that they were like, I've always been told I have to do this, I have to live up to this, I have to be this person, and then they rebel, and they start either rebelling against the rules of the faith, the standards of how things are quote-unquote supposed to be done, or they end up rebelling against God altogether and rejecting a relationship.
So that's the classic PK stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Unpack it. You wanted to say some more.
Well, I was just saying that, you know, when I talk to children who are missionary kids or pastor's kids, the pressure to perform, especially like one of the things I hear from missionary kids, especially when they come back on furlough and they have to fundraise, we have to present as the perfect family. We have to present as the model of health. We have to all be happy and get along. They can't see us fighting. And that's even in the pastor's kid world, you can't be the kid that gets in trouble. You can't be the kid that's acting up in Sunday school. And then, of course, they rebel against that because that's an unfair stereotype. And, you know, the law of liberty and law of love kind of come into play a little. And they rebel because they don't really know what it's like to have a healthy relationship with God.
Yes. And so we're talking about this dynamic
mm-hmm.
under the topic today of neglect.
Exactly.
Okay. So what do you say to all the maybe pastors out there who's listening?
Yeah.
And they say, but what you described is non-neglect. We gave lots of attention. We were constantly monitoring their behavior. We were constantly disciplining them to make sure they were the good kids. They were doing what they're supposed to. That's not neglectful, Pastor James. How are you telling us that we're neglecting where we're being, you know, we're doing the opposite of neglect? Is there neglect here or not?
You know, neglecting to...
And the answer is yes. I'm wanting you to point it out.
Yeah, yeah. It's neglecting to provide that healthy love, that healthy nurturing that properly models the love of God and the character of God in their life.
Okay, so let's... How?
Sure, but by saying, hey, you know, family comes before the church. You know, my time with you is more important than my time with my parishioners. My time, you know, investing in, you know, our relationship is more important than the work of the church. Even though my faith and my relationship with God is important, the work of the church, the work of the mission does not come before you.
I love the way you said that what they neglected was to love their family more than the mission.
Yes.
And the children realized, we are not loved more than the mission. In fact, they get angry because they perceive whether it's, and almost everyone who's done it to their family will deny it, but functionally, mm-hmm. the kids perceive that they will be sacrificed for the mission.
Yeah. I've actually heard a missionary, you know, kid say, my family sacrificed me on the altar of ministry.
There you, exactly. And that is the resentment. And so what was neglected, you neglected to hear your kid. You neglected to know their heart. You neglected to connect with them where you could feel their pain and walk that journey with them and they could connect with you. You were so invested in the mission, they became a cog in a wheel. They became another tool in your toolbox that you were manipulating for your mission.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't an individual that you were seeking to love and develop and nurture.
That's right.
You think I'm overstating?
No, strongly? I think that's exactly
okay.
It.
And so all your attention was not actually attention on developing them, the individual. Your attention was on polishing them to be the little tool you needed them to be so you could look good. Yes, that's exactly right.
Am I saying this too harshly?
No, that's reality.
Okay. And this is where people get confused because they're looking at all the time and energy they put into the child and they think they weren't neglectful.
That's right.
Okay. And this is where man looks on the outward appearance and the Lord looks on the heart. And yes, there is the neglect of no attention at all, but then there's the neglect of actually neglecting the reality of the person in the relationship and, and approaching them through an authoritarian, rule structure of conformity to what I need you to be so I can look good or our mission can be fulfilled.
Sure. And then I could even see where that would overflow into other areas where if the parent has an identity issue or maybe they have a business where they're well known in the community and they have to have an image they keep up, or maybe they're more famous in the music world, the movie world, whatever, or the athletic world. And I've even seen parents who have pushed sports on their kids to the point where we've got to be on the ball field. We've got to be practicing rather than developing that. And they become performance driven in their relationships. I have to perform to earn love that way. Do you think that would fall into emotional neglect as well?
Yes, the same dynamic we just described. Are we saying then, Doc, are you saying that we shouldn't be holding our kids accountable? Yeah. We shouldn't have standards? We should just let them come home and have whatever they want? We shouldn't actually try to make sure that they behave properly and don't fight with each other?
Yeah.
I mean, you can hear somebody.
Of course.
Okay, yeah. So what's the answer to that question? How do you, in other words, how do you approach that in a way that is not the neglect and not simply trying to polish them up for your need, but you're also, having that loving, disciplined, Christ-like home? And it's about motive, guys. It's about motive.
About the heart.
That's right. It's about the motive. Why are you doing it? Yeah. Are you doing it because you're primarily interested in their character development? Are you doing it because your primary interest in how you look or the mission's going to work?
Yeah.
If you're doing it because we have to look good, we're the pastor's family. They look up to us. What you're saying to the kid is, it doesn't really matter. You don't matter. Your development is not really primary here. Your character, as long as you look good, what matters is our fulfilling the mission.
Yeah.
But if you actually get your priorities right, son, what matters is your heart. I want you to know Jesus. I want you to be healthy. I want you to be whole. I want you to be mature. Mm-hmm. I want you to be happy. That's why I'm doing this for you. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, they will, and they respond, okay?
Yeah.
They will then fulfill all those things for the mission.
That's right. So if we forget our why, we'll confuse our what.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
But it's heard differently from the child.
Yeah.
Completely differently. If it is for, they will feel sacrificed and they're not valued.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll resent.
Yeah. And then they'll rebel. Yeah.
And then it's
huge. Yeah. Huge.
Yeah. Other things about neglect.
Question for you. Have you ever worked with a patient that was really resistant to acknowledging the emotional neglect that you can so clearly see based in their presentation?
Is it? So my question back would be to that. Mm-hmm. First off, yes. And my question then back is it necessary to acknowledge it in order to heal them? If somebody has a broken leg, do they have to acknowledge that their leg was broken in order to heal it? In other words, they have to acknowledge how it was broken, the events that broke it, or can they only acknowledge they have a broken leg? They have acknowledged they had went through neglect, or can the neglect cause problems? They're not here because they went through neglect. Mm-hmm. They're here because whatever neglect did to them is causing problems in their life today.
Yes.
That's why they're here. Mm-hmm. That's the broken leg. The leg is broken.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the wound. A person with a broken leg, mm-hmm. because and they got roofied, and they woke up after the roofie with a broken leg. Mm-hmm. Do we have to wait for them to understand and how the leg got broken or to heal it? Mm-hmm. So if they don't want to acknowledge that it was broken, that's okay with me. I don't really care. It's like, okay, what are the problems that you're struggling with today? Mm-hmm. How is it impacting you? And how can we help you heal from that? If they heal from that, then acknowledging whether they were neglected or not is really irrelevant. Acknowledging that I was roofied and and my leg was broken with a hammer versus I was roofied and my leg was broken with a car accident, it doesn't really matter. Let's heal the leg.
So would it be okay to say just I'm a metaphor guy, that this isn't a hardware issue like a person who gets a TBI and the actual physical structure of the brain is changed. This is a software issue that can be recovered and healed if a person...
Not exactly. I mean, yeah, I understand what you... Yes, on the very superficial level, yes, it's not a direct injury to the brain that caused it.
Okay.
However...
As far as healing.
However, neglect causes neurobiologic change.
Okay. Okay, so there is some...
The brain is always in a state of flux.
Right.
You take piano lessons and you learn to play the piano, you're changing your brain.
Right.
You stop playing the piano, your brain is changing and it's pruning back networks. Mm-hmm. Everything we do in life is changing the brain. So the neglectful childhood develops a brain in a way that we mentioned earlier, differently. So their brain is changed, but it's not an injury like a TBI, which actually damages the brain, but the brain is changed by that. So... That's what I meant. Yes.
Okay, I'm with you. I wanted to get to that. That always, when we think about these kind of things, I'm always wondering, what's the, you know, you give a good diagnosis. Okay, what's the likelihood of recovery? If I practice the remedy, mm-hmm. can I? I grew up in a neglectful home, like you said. Whether I admit the why or the what, I've got the symptoms of it. I've got the diagnosis of it, but I can heal from it.
Yeah, and that is mostly spiritual, psychological, relational, not neurobiological, okay. Except the neurobiology has been wired in such a way it actually makes you more fearful of connecting. Mm-hmm. So you can still get over it, but you have a higher hurdle than if you'd had a healthy childhood. Sure. Back to what you were saying, though, there are caveats where if the denial is such that what they're denying is the actual, you know, denying that I have a broken leg. Mm-hmm. Denying the actual current problem, mm-hmm. okay, then that has to actually be brought in. You have to deal with what's actually true in their life right now, mm-hmm. but they don't have to remember past events necessarily to deal what's true in their life right now. Now, to the degree that they're denying, you know, for instance, let's say they were wronged by somebody, mm-hmm. and they're holding to resentment and anger. They remember them, but they won't actually bring it up. They'll have to deal with that because it's not the wrong of the past that's their problem. Mm-hmm. It's that resentment, anger, bitterness they hold in their heart today about the problem. You follow? It looks like a subtle difference, and people think we're talking about the past. We're not. Mm-hmm. We're talking about your anger, bitterness, resentment, lack of trust today because you've never resolved that, and you're still tore up about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if a person, you know, obviously comes to our clinic, we've got clinical modalities that the therapist and the psychologist, psychiatrist can do. But let's say you've got a family member. Let's say you've got a parishioner in your church, a congregant that you work with. Are there things that a regular layperson can do to help a friend or family member that's going through it? Or is it not appropriate for them to try? Like, I mean, I guess what's the boundary with that?
With everything we deal with in life, there's spectrums of severity. Some people can come into adulthood with neglect that they are wounded from. It impacts their life. Yet through, they get into a healthy church. They find healthy friends. They make healthy human connections. They know Jesus Christ. And they find actual healing for their soul. They find identity. They find mission. They find value. They find purpose. That happens.
Okay.
So our responsibility is to relate to people in a very Christ-like way, valuing them for who they are and being truthful, not accepting projected blame or inadequacies, taking responsibility for other people's feelings in dynamics. I feel this, I feel that. Why did you? And you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And healthy people, we love you, but if you want to feel that way, you can. And rather than try to placate that,
right.
So in some church communities, if it's a more severe case, there is a constant inadequacy, constant frustration, constant perception of interpreting neutral events in ways that are somehow uncaring and neglectful. Neutral events,
right.
They didn't specifically get called on during song service.
Mm-hmm.
And there's 200 people in the audience, 4 people got called on. Mm-hmm. They weren't one of them to say, what's your song for song service? Right. And they feel that they were neglected.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that kind of a neutral event, but they take it personally and feel hurt.
Sure.
That makes sense. And you will see that. Mm-hmm. They don't realize there were 200 people in the room. And only 4 got called on.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you call on me? I'm not important. I'm being neglected. Yeah. And they might not consciously think it. They just feel it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And the church, healthy church members should not try to fix that. You can't fix that. There's nothing you can do to that. Mm. If they bring it up and you're a friend, you could actually point out to them, well, there are 196 other people they can call on too.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And maybe that
would be okay to like point out the truth.
If you have
what you lie with the relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. But you wouldn't want to validate that in any way. Yeah.
Sure.
You know, and it's hard. You're special. Yeah, we should have called on you. You wouldn't want to then, if you were the pastor, she complained, she didn't get called on, and call on her pretty much every time so you don't get the complaint. That would be that would actually collude with the pathology.
Mm-hmm.
She needs to be able to tolerate being treated as an equal to everyone else. Mm-hmm. You don't prioritize her up, you don't prioritize her down.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, good questions. Good questions. Healing practices, ultimately, it is finding the ultimate healing for all of us is finding validation in Jesus Christ, your true identity, who you are, experiencing His indwelling spirit, experiencing His calling. Do you know His calling? Are you fulfilling His calling for your life? Are you feeling His purpose in your life? And this is where the real healing comes from. And then connecting with other godly people in mission.
Mm-hmm.
Being valued on a team,
right,
for your actual accomplishments and for who you are, the person,
mm-hmm.
who what you bring. You might not bring great skill. They might just value you because you bring a great smile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Other questions about neglect today? And
you know, I guess it's hard whenever, I'm glad we point some of this stuff out. You know, I don't want anybody who's looking back and saying, okay, I'm realizing now I was a neglectful parent. I was the pastor who put the church first. I was the business person who was gone. You know, is it too late for people who recognize that?
Too late for what?
I mean, obviously they can't go back in time to do it, but is it too late to go back to that? I mean, I guess it depends on the age of the kids, sure, but you know, is it possible to go back to that child and say, let's pretend they're 12, 13 years old. I've spent the first 12 years, 13 years of their life being emotionally neglectful. And I realized, wow, I am.
So the danger in that is going the other ditch. First order business, whenever you have new insight and you look back and you realize that you hadn't done things as well as you could, mm-hmm. is to recognize history can't be changed.
Right.
Yeah.
Only you can change. Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us today. If you have questions, send those into questions@designformore.net, questions@designformore.net, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us on Designed for More, brought to you by Come and Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcasts for more inspiring content. Mm-hmm.